Nothing new about this particular topic. The story is still the same. We've got a young shepherd boy who takes a slingshot, fires a rock, and hits the giant in the middle of the forehead. The giant falls over, and David takes a sword, and takes the sword of the giant, actually, and cuts his head off. There you have it. We're done. Hopefully we get a little more material tonight from and lessons that we can take home with us from this particular chapter and this story about David. By way of introduction, the theme for this particular Vacation Bible School is God's faith force. And probably the best place to find the Hall of Faith, if you will, is Hebrews chapter 11, and you're going to find many of these people in Hebrews chapter 11. If you've not looked at that chapter recently, you may do so. There's a lot of good material about individuals who had faith in the Lord, and because of that, they are in this particular chapter. The rest of the theme says God's faith force and their heroes because of godly living. So as we go through our lesson tonight, and certainly from the lesson of last evening and the lesson to come, Lord willing, tomorrow night, I hope that you'll pay attention to what makes these individuals heroes. And it's godly living is the description and definition here. If you think in terms of a faith force, we just finished the 4th of July celebration here, and a lot of the 4th of July celebration was directed towards our military forces. We also hear things about our police force. Those are groups of people that serve our communities, that serve our nation, that protect us, that make us safe. And that's what that particular meaning of the word force here. Groups of people that serve and help. The individuals we're talking about throughout this Vacation Bible School will be individuals that are real people, by the way. I had an opportunity, if that's the right terminology here, someone stopped me in a class one time when I used the word biblical characters. Now, I don't have anything negative to say about that terminology, but I will clarify it. What the person said to me was that they didn't like that terminology. Reason being because it made them believe that the biblical characters were something like out of a comic strip character or cartoon characters or not real people was the point. And that individuals out of God's word are real live individuals that have had ups and downs in life just as we do. They face trials just as we do. They have some winning times just as we do, and they've got some down times. But these are real individuals, and I accept the point that was made to me. These are not characters as in superheroes as we're talking about in this particular Vacation Bible School. These are real individuals that that serve God. The hero part of this, and I appreciate our class of last evening and David's presentation. And as he said, this is still a Bible class, and if you want to participate, feel free. I'm also hopefully going to get some answers to some of my questions that I'm going to throw out, which being the first one here, what's the definition of a hero? What makes one a hero? What are those qualifications? How do you know if somebody's a hero? Ah, somebody that stands out. Thank you, Judy. Somebody that stands out above and beyond the norm. Okay. All right. All right. Paul says that someone who has overcome their fears to do something, get out of their comfort zone, if you will, and to do something above and beyond. Okay. Like running into a burning building or rescuing somebody from a car or something like that that has been an accident, okay, doing something special along that line. I have a shirt that was given to me by the West Virginia National Guard people. And the front of the shirt says, "All heroes don't wear capes." Obviously, reference to our military forces. So they're not all like the superheroes that are described here. So those are a couple of qualifications that have been listed. There are several others, obviously. It could be something about fame. It should, you know, it could be, I think about some of our generals that came back from great battles. They're considered to be heroes. Some of our military service, when they come back from overseas, considered to be heroes. They're welcomed along that line. I'm going to say also, in addition to what we've just talked about, that heroes are people that are dedicated to a cause. They're loyal to the situation as it's going on, and they invest time, energy, sacrifice, whatever it turns out to be. But it is above and beyond the call. The definition for the hero that we're talking about, for these heroes, is just somebody that's an individual who is godly living. That's the definition. When I thought about this, it brought to my mind a scripture about a lady named Mary. And Mary is the same individual who used her hair to wipe the feet of our Lord. And it says something very special about her. It says that forever she will be known because of this one deed that she did. That was outstanding in itself. It's something different, but it's not something famous as such. It's just an act of service that was done to our Lord. And because of that, Scripture tells us that we will forever know Mary because of that. So becoming a hero doesn't require some great monstrous deed or some great bit of fame. It requires dedication to a cause and to have some activities that are associated with that. Now, as we think about last night, the qualifications that made Daniel a hero, and I think the message that was trying to be put across was that Daniel was a hero of godly living because he did the right thing. He did what was expected, but he did what was right. He didn't do what was commanded by those that were anti to God's way of doing things. He did the right thing. So again, use that terminology, do the right thing as far as God is concerned, and that would make one a hero in this case. Now, as we turn our attention to David and Goliath, there were some terms came to my mind. We've certainly heard about the word giant killers before. We've heard about individuals, maybe a smaller athlete who takes on a larger athlete, and the smaller athlete prevails in that particular situation. We've heard about you can't fight City Hall. You can't be the little guy out there fighting against City Hall. There are many times that people will cheer for a person or a team or something just because they're the underdog. And sometimes that no-name team comes out of nowhere, the Cinderella team, to win. And sometimes people that are involved in sports and those kinds of activities get kind of excited about that. It's a good thing to have somebody who's the underdog to win. Now, 1 Samuel, I think I told you 1 Kings 17. 1 Samuel 17 is also where we really want to be tonight. And 1 Samuel 17 is actually going to tell us the story of David and Goliath. There's nothing new in this particular story. It's one that we're all familiar with, but I hope that you'll follow along in 1 Samuel 17 as we take a look at this story again. And I also want to apply some things that might be lessons that we can learn from this particular story, other than the fact that the little guy beat the big guy. We know that happened. Now, there's a battle going on in our world today, and that battle has to do with individuals who don't serve God and those individuals who do serve God. Those individuals who stand for right, those individuals who don't stand for anything. That battle was going on. And we that are in the church that Christ has built, we're aware of this battle. And maybe we hope sometimes that all this is going to disappear. We don't have to worry about it anymore, and God's going to take care of things. But this is not the case necessarily. Perhaps things are going to get worse than they are even today about what's going on, the battle for our minds, the battle for our moral values, things that are going on. This might represent the battle that we're talking about between David and Goliath. Let's take a look at the story itself, and we're going to be kind of in and out of this tonight. There's a confrontation going on here between David and Goliath, of course. This confrontation was a larger part, or a smaller part, of a larger battle between the Philistines and the Israelites. These two groups of people had been at odds for a long time. And in fact, if we fast forward to today, we still have groups of people in the Middle East that are at odds continually. But back then, we had the Philistines and the Israelites that were continually at odds. Now, when David identified Goliath in the part of this story that we're going to get to, he called him an uncircumcised Philistine. That wasn't a term of endearment, obviously, and it meant more than just the physical response that we sometimes attach to this. What he really was saying was that you, Goliath, are not a servant of God. You're not one of us. You're not one of the individuals who serves God. You don't belong to God's people. And this is the beginning for David learning to stand up and be prepared to fight Goliath. Goliath opposed everything that God stood for. Goliath opposed everything that God's people stand for. This was a battle between, again, those individuals who stood for God, his people, and those individuals who do not stand for God in any sense. That's what the battle was about here. Goliath and David just happened to be the symbols of those battles. I guess I'm wondering if it doesn't sound familiar to our world today again, that we have individuals that stand for God, and many in this room, certainly we stand for God. There are individuals outside of our settings that have no knowledge of God or out-and-out hatred towards the church. All you have to do is read our editorials on Sunday to see those individuals that say separation of church and state and all those things that go on there. Now, it also seems like sometime, I'm going to take us to the prophet Elijah here a little bit. Elijah was in a battle. He went toe-to-toe with the prophets of Baal, and with God's help, he won that battle. He was at the mountaintop at that point in time, but it wasn't very far after that until he found out that Jezebel had a contract out on his life. He went to the kind of the depths of depression, and as he was working his way through that, God provided strength through an angel. That's a whole other story, but think about that. He finally kind of got things together, and then he said, "I'm the only one serving the Lord." I think sometimes perhaps we might even think that of ourselves. The whole world doesn't care about religious issues or spiritual values again. And in Elijah's case, there were 7,000 prophets still serving the Lord. So we need to just pay attention to the fact that there are many people that are still serving the Lord. Now, David recognized that what was happening here was an attack upon the authority of God, Jehovah. He wasn't happy about it. The God that David served was certainly far different than the God that Goliath served. Goliath served two gods especially. The first one was Dagon. Excuse me. And if you remember the story here, that the Ark of the Covenant had been stolen, and this is found in 1 Samuel chapter 5, the Ark of the Covenant has been stolen, and it's carried off by the Philistines, and they put it into the temple of Dagon. And if you remember that story, their god, Dagon, actually, as nighttime came, the next morning, Dagon was on the floor. The head of that particular god was on the floor. His hands were gone. And there was a great message involved there, and the ark returned. Now, the temple of Dagon, pardon me, that was found in 1 Samuel 5, And the definition for Dagon actually means fish, as I have been able to research this. So this was the god to the fish. And the picture that they had was that it had probably the head of a fish, the hands of a man. And this was the god that Goliath chose to serve. Now the second god is one that we're probably more familiar with. It's called Beelzebub. And Beelzebub might be translated the Lord of the Flies, first of all. Now keep in mind, would you rather worship, and this was an issue throughout all of history here and all of biblical times, worship something that's made, handmade, that has no real, can't talk, can't speak, those kind of things. That was Dagon, the idol of the fish, or the god of the fish head. Or now we have the Lord of the Flies. And even worse, the terminology was really a dung beetle. You decide, would you rather worship God, the Jehovah, that takes care of us, or the god of the flies, or the god of the dung beetles? Take your choice. Goliath was on this side. David was on this side. Now, the battle was really over this group of people that were serving God as opposed to those who chose to serve as Goliath did, those particular idols and those particular gods. Are there some parallels to our world today? Well, that's the message I'm trying to get across throughout our lesson tonight. There are individuals who serve all sorts of gods, if you will, many that don't take God seriously about what he says, many that don't take the Bible as truth, that don't accept that as authority. And again, that battle continues in our world today. God's people are under attack right now, and there's a variety of ways in which this attack might be taking place. The first one that comes to my mind, it's a battle for our intellectual abilities or our minds, the minds of us as individuals, and the minds of our children. This is a major issue going on right now. And the one I'm going to start with is a doctrine, if you will, that's out there in society right now. I'm going to call this the doctrine of tolerance. The doctrine of tolerance says the following, that everybody is okay. Love everybody. Accept everybody. There's no principles. There's no guidelines. And tolerance is a major direction within our schools today, within our media today, and be careful about that particular message. Permeates our entire society. So the first battle is for our minds. The second one is, as I've described already, an attempt to take away the authority of God. The Bible's not truth. There is no standard for that kind of thing. Our schools and our higher education issues are certainly one of these battle forms that are taking place. Our moral values are under attack. Our ethical values are under attack. This is an interesting one to me because in the profession that I happen to be in, we are required to renew our license on a regular basis, and we are required to take 3 hours of ethics training every year. Is it not a sad situation that requires individuals to take ethical training? Where does that come from? What's happened to our world? Again, ethical values are under attack here. And even more so, there's some places that are actually under persecution, as we well know. Fortunately, we don't face that here. We have the freedom to come and to worship as we worship on a regular basis. We don't have to worry about somebody coming in and forbidding us to worship, let alone the physical contacts that might take place. So these are just some of the giant battles, if you will, that we might face. Now, as we return to our story, the style of battle during this period of time was totally different than we might think about today. There were two armies. It was the Philistine army, and it was the Israelite army. And they, as it's described in this chapter in 1 Samuel, they're on various sides of the hill with a valley in between. And the style of fighting back then was to choose one soldier and one soldier from both sides then would engage in a battle, and whichever soldier won that particular event, then all the army was a winner for that side. Maybe that's a good approach to life, I'm not sure, but that's how it was done back then. Now, as we look at this, that particular approach, if you're on the Philistine side, and I'm going to put them over here for a moment, they're up on this mountain, and they have chosen their champion to fight the Israelites. Their chances of winning are pretty good, because they have a guy that they've chosen who is 9 feet 9 inches tall, approximately. He is a great warrior. He's wearing armor, and by the way, depending on which translation or which method that you're using to weigh this armor, but he had armor that was 157 pounds of armor on him. I reflected a little bit on my military career when I was going through basic training. We had to wear packs, and we'd run with these packs on our back, and they totaled 75 pounds. That was a lot of running and a lot of work. Goliath is wearing something that's 157 pounds worth of armor on him. He also has a spear in his hand, and this spear itself weighs between 18 and 19 pounds, depending on the document that you might read. Those of you who hunt, for example, and you're carrying a rifle with you, what's the weight of a rifle that you're carrying? How much? 3 to 4 pounds. All right, 3 to 4 pounds. He's got a spear that weighs 18 pounds. If you're looking at this corner over here where this Philistine giant is, you got a pretty good opportunity that you're going to win this battle. He's ranting and raving and screaming and blaspheming and challenging the Israelite army. Where's the Israelite army? Well, there's an interesting verse in this chapter of 1 Samuel 17. If you go down to verse 11 of 1 Samuel 17, when Saul and all Israel heard these words, which are the taunts, etc., of the Philistines, they were dismayed, this translation says, and greatly fearful. Anybody want to be on this side right now? We've got Goliath over here. We've got this giant of a man, a great warrior. He's ready to fight anybody that the Israelites can produce. And Paul, you just said earlier today, what makes one a hero? Overcome their fears. What about this Israeli army, if you will? They're filled with fear simply because of the words. And as you look at this guy, okay? So that's where the army is. That's the battle that we've got set up here. So the Israelites certainly, the Philistines certainly believed they were going to be winners here. But there are a few things they didn't count on. First thing they didn't count on was God. God was on their side. Second thing they didn't count on was that there was this young shepherd boy, a teenager, who was a harp player, and he took care of his sheep of the fields. And they didn't count on him being here on this occasion. His father, Jesse, had sent David, the youngest of this family, out to the battlefields where three of David's brothers were engaged in the army. He sent them out there as a visit to cheer them up, cheer up the crowd, if you will, and also to bring them some food. Now, I want you to put yourself in the sandals of David here for a moment as he arrives at this battlefield. The first thing that he sees, or that he hears, is this giant up here who's taunting, yelling, challenging, blaspheming the God Jehovah that David knew about. He hears all that, And then he looks to this side where the soldiers are, and what does he see? He sees all of his soldiers over here hiding, trying to avoid any contact with this giant. And if you put yourself in David's shoes here just for a moment, in his sandals, what you're going to wonder is, David's thinking, what's going on here? What's happening? How come nobody is standing up to this individual who's blaspheming our God? How come nobody's standing up for right? Who's going to stand up for the Lord? All my soldiers, my fellow brothers over here are hiding and avoiding and fearful. So put yourself in his sandals as he goes about trying to figure this out. He's astonished. I think he's dismayed, if you will. And I think he's concerned about what's going on among the troops here. Now, a lesson for us today, I hope, falls in this category, that all of us have opportunities similar to what David ran into. We face our own Goliath, whatever that may be, and I've mentioned some of those already today. Some of those giant things that we're talking about fall in the category of the battle for our minds, the battle for our morals, the battle for our country, the battle for our religious rights, whatever the situation is. We have options. We can certainly choose to be like our fellow soldiers over here are, who were hiding, who were fearful, who chose not to engage the Goliaths, who simply hoped that it was all going to go away and something was going to happen. Well, God's on our side, so we just sit and do nothing. Or we have a choice to be like David. And David chose to confront Goliath, his Goliath on this occasion. So we all have opportunities to choose, choose whether we're going to stand up or whether we're going to sit on the sidelines. Are you going to decide to step forward, regardless of whatever the consequences or the risk are going to be? David knew that he had a risk when he stepped forward to fight Goliath. We might find some risk that we must take. What made David a person who was a godly liver, if you will? We're told that David is a man after God's own heart. So first of all, he loved the Lord. He was a righteous individual. He strove to do the right thing. And he had a courageous heart. And what we're going to talk about today and this particular quality that we're talking about of David is that he had the courage to step forward. He had the courage to stand up and fight his Goliath during this period of time. So how about you? You have a courageous heart? Are you willing to stand up? Are you willing to fight the Goliaths of our world today? Now, as we get back to the battle here, I've described in this corner, we have Goliath. Goliath is over 9 feet tall. He is filled, he's wearing 150 some pounds of armor. He's got an 18 pound spear in his hand. He is ranting and raving and challenging the people. He's arrogant and he's defiant and he blasphemes God. That's who we have in this corner. Now for 40 days, he's been wandering around out here challenging the armies of Israel. And no one has accepted his challenge. He thinks he's won. The Philistine people think they've won. They totally believe that there's no way that they're going to lose this battle. So in this corner, we have Goliath. In this corner, we have David. We have David. David is a young man, a teenager perhaps. He has no military experience. He's not a warrior. He is not dressed for battle. He appears to be an individual that's certainly not going to win the battle here. He has no armor. He has no spear. He has no sword. And yet, he's going to accept the challenge. This corner, Goliath, this corner, David. Who are you going to choose? Well, if you put yourself in the sandals of Goliath here for a moment and think this through, Goliath is ready for a battle. He's prepared. He's well-trained. He's well-armed. And his belief must be that, well, this has got to be some sort of a trick that's going on here. Perhaps this must be a joke that they're trying to play on me. All he saw was this young shepherd boy who had a sling and five smooth rocks. Goliath must have been laughing at one point in time. He threatened, according to 1 Samuel 17, to absolutely destroy David. He cursed David, and worse than that, he cursed our God. If you, in the 17th chapter of Samuel, 1 Samuel again, we're going to start in verse 43 here to look at a few of these verses. Verse 43 of 1 Samuel 17. The Philistine, that would be Goliath, he said to David, and I'm reading from the New American Standard, by the way. He said to David, "Am I a dog that you came to me with sticks?" And the Philistine cursed David by his gods, Dagon and Beelzebub. Remember the Lord of the flies, the Lord of the dung beetle, and the Lord of the fish head are threatening you. We're threatening your God. Now, if we go to verse 45, David responds to the Philistines, "You come to me with a sword, a spear, and a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have taunted." And then down to verse 47, "And that all this assembly may know that the Lord does not deliver by sword or by spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands." So David is prepared because he trusts his God. He's ready to stand up to this individual because he knows that God is on his side. David does not back down. In fact, he goes right after Goliath. And we know the story here. Even though he picked up five stones to put in that sling, and this is not the type of slingshot that we might know in our world today where we do this. This is a slingshot like this that was used as a weapon back in that time. David had had opportunity to use that sling in other occasions, and he knew how to use that as a weapon. He put one stone there. He whirls it around, delivers the rock to the Goliath, and hits Goliath dead in the center of the forehead, and Goliath falls, and David runs to him. He takes Goliath's sword and chops off his head. And at this point in time, David certainly has won the battle. The army of Israel now has won the battle. And morale builds up. And we're told that actually the army now gets so energized that they chase the Philistines clear away from this land. And by the way, the Philistines were in the land that belonged to Israel. And now they push all these people out. Victory comes to Israel. And morale is restored, and all this because David took a stand. So my question again for our lesson of the evening, what stand do you need to take? What Goliaths do you face? And I'm not talking about physical health, things of that nature. Those are all issues that we may face in life. I'm talking a bigger issue here in our society. What problems do we face? We all know what's happened in our world. We know what's happened in our societies. We know that the battle for our minds, the battle for our morals, the battle to take God away, not to have prayers in public times, things of that nature. I made mention a little bit ago about all you have to do is read our Sunday editorials for about the last month. And the individuals who are writing in there belong to the Atheist Association of West Virginia or some such thing. And they were complaining because of all things at the Parkersburg High School band concert for the last 2 years. They had the nerve to have an opening prayer there. At the Edison Junior High School awards assembly, they had the nerve to have a prayer. That's what those individuals were upset about. So are there Goliaths that we all face? You know there are. There's an effort being put on to take away our rights along that line. But we're not the only one serving God right here in Parkersburg, right here in this community, though. There are many people that are still standing up for what's right. Now, with that being said, we're going to complete the rest of our class, but we're going to take a 10-minute break tonight. So everybody gets to stand up, take a break, walk around, do what you need to do. It's about 20 after 7 right now. We're going to resume this at 7:30. So be back on time, please. Thank you for being here. Story of David and Goliath, obviously, and I've tried to compare the battle that David went through with some similarities to our world today. Our Goliaths don't necessarily come in the form of, fighting the big giant physically, but it certainly comes in a similar kind of fashion. It's those who stand for God and those who don't, and that's the world in which we live right now. Kay asked me something at the break, but it's something I was going to bring up during our class. Oftentimes when we hear the story of David and Goliath, we talk about the fact that he picked up those five smooth stones, and we sing a song that says that he took the sling and he killed the giant. Well, in reality, that's not what the Bible says if you read very carefully. What really killed the giant? He lost his head. All right. The stone actually knocked him over, and David then used the giant's sword to cut off his head. So I understand the sentiment behind that particular song, what they're trying to teach, but in reality, the stone just knocked him over. All right. The last part of this, what I'd like to kind of focus on again are more specific lessons that we might learn from this story. The one that I've introduced already is, do you stand for God against this Goliath, who people that don't stand for God? That's the first thing. The next lesson that I'd like to have you think about and reflect upon, just because you do the right thing doesn't mean the right outcome is going to be there. Now, you know the answer to that is, just because you do the right thing doesn't mean the right consequences are going to come from that, or the right results are going to come from that. But we still have a responsibility to do the right thing. If we continue with the story that we've got here from David and Goliath, believe it or not, not everybody was happy with the fact that David was present on this occasion. And when David showed up, he had a brother, Eliab, one of his three brothers that was here. And Eliab did all he could do to discourage David from being present. And in fact, he did more than discourage him. He was angry about the whole thing. And he accused David of having the wrong motive for even being here. Now remember why Jesse had sent him there? To visit his brothers who were at the battlefront and to bring food. Eliab said, well, David, you're just here because you want to make a name for yourself. And David is just a shepherd boy. And he didn't come there for that purpose. And in fact, the scriptures are going to tell us a little bit about this. Eliab confronted David. He told him to go back home and tend to his sheep. And that he was only there to make a name for himself. Told him to go home. If you get down to in chapter 17 of 1 Samuel, and we're going to go to verses 28 and 29, first of all, in this chapter. 28 and 29. Now Eliab, his oldest brother, heard when he spoke to the men, And Eliab's anger burned against David, and he said, "Why have you come down? And with whom have you left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know your insolence and the wickedness of your heart, for you have come down in order to see the battle." But David said, "What I have done now, was it not just a question?" And now if we go to the verses 34 through 37, we're going to find out exactly why David has chosen to stand up in this occasion. Verse 34 to 37, beginning. But David said to Saul, this is in response to, "Why should I send you out on the battlefield?" David responds to Saul in this fashion. "Your servant was tending his father's sheep when a lion or a bear came and took a lamb from the flock. Well, I went out after him and attacked him and rescued it from his mouth. And when he rose up against me, I seized him by his beard and struck him and killed him. Your servant has killed both the lion and the bear." Now, if we stop there, we know that David had the abilities to deal with turmoil and trials, and he protected his sheep. But he's going to tell us why he did that later on in these two scriptures. "And this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, since he has taunted the armies of the living God." And David said, "The Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear, he will deliver me from the hand of the Philistine." And Saul said to David, "Go, and may the Lord be with you." So David did what he did. He stood up against this Goliath because, one, he trusted in his God, and he had previous experience of God delivering and answering prayers and helping him through tough times. So he trusted God to be able to get through this particular event. And sometimes, I don't know about you, but sometimes those individuals that are closest to us, might be family members, it might be a good friend, it might even be somebody within the church, believe it or not, who will try to discourage and try to rain on our parade. And the message here is that David didn't let his brother ruin his ability or time to serve the Lord. So just because I'm going to do the right thing doesn't mean, or I'm doing the right thing doesn't mean I'm going to get the right results. And it doesn't mean that everybody's going to be happy about it. You don't do it because I'm trying to please everybody else. You do it because I'm trying to please the Lord. The next lesson I'd like to leave with you, and this is only my interpretation of this story here, but I'm going to suggest keep things simple. David did. When he came on the battlefield area, he sized up his opponent. He thought about a plan. He simply got out his sling, picked up five rocks, and he carried it through. It was a simple plan. It was a simple operation. And because he was able to carry that through, he was successful because God was on his side. So we don't have to have some elaborate scheme or elaborate plan or an elaborate event to take place for us to be successful. Keep it simple as you think in terms of success and let God do the work. One simple sling, one rock, and a sword got the job done. Now, the next lesson I'd like to share with you along this line is that David didn't need to use all the armor and the spears and the swords and all that stuff that was there. If you try to do a visual picture here for a moment, you know, you think back in medieval times or even in this particular time, David has not been, most of these armors and the battlement that they wear, at least they're designed for their body. David had no chance. In fact, he was given Saul's stuff, if you read the story. It wasn't designed for his body style. And you think about this when you're trying to go into battle and you've got all this armor on you and you're trying to take a step forward and trying to be involved in the battle. And here he is against this Goliath guy. David used what God had already given him. What did God provide for him on this occasion? It wasn't armor. It wasn't a spear. It wasn't a sword. He provided the ability for him to trust in the Lord, first of all, and he provided skills to David that he could use. Who's more mobile here, a 9.5-foot guy or David? You know the answer to that. Who's quicker, you think, a 9.5-foot guy wearing all this armor or David? I know you know the answer to that. Who is younger, if you will, here? David. He's much quicker, he's younger, he has more mobility. Goliath is clumsy, big, slow. David used what God had given him. It wasn't necessary to have man-made things in order to fight back against Goliath. Saul believed that David needed to be dressed for the occasion, but God had already prepared David for this particular battle through the events that had took place out in the wilderness area and the wins that he had already had. Be practical. Rely upon God. I think this would be the message that David would give us. Be practical. Rely upon God to do what God has made. Use what's available. He used a slingshot and some rocks to get the job done. He also was aware of the weaknesses of his opponent. Yes, Dave. Okay, mail is an ancient word, if you say. It just means armor. Mail is armor. So it's all those. We see pictures of knights dressed in mail or armor, and that's what all that is. It's a covering on his head. It's a covering on his body, his chest protector, things like that. Okay, just armor, depending on the translation you read from. Thank you. All right. David had a courageous heart. And that's the message behind this. What made him a hero? He had a courageous heart. Now, along that line, we'll talk about courage again. How much courage do we have as individuals? Do we have a heart that's courageous enough to stand up against our Goliaths? What would you do in, I'll give you some scenarios here. We've all been in circumstances like this. Number one. We have an individual who's using God's name in vain in our presence. Do you have enough courage and a courageous heart? What would David have done? Hey, David didn't appreciate the fact that this gigantic man over here, Goliath in this corner, was taunting his fellow Israelites. But more importantly, he didn't like the fact that he was taunting his God. What would you do? Would you have enough courage to say something about it? Or would you be like the Israeli army over here, just hiding on the sidelines over here, hoping all this is going to go away? For 40 days this went on. How about, would you have enough courage to talk to a brother within this congregation or any congregation who was sowing seeds of discord or creating problems or doing something you shouldn't be doing? We have biblical example of this. Our brother Paul withstood our brother Peter to his face because he was doing some things that weren't right. Would you have the courage to go to your brother or your sister in a loving way and to let them know that there's a problem? In a more positive sense, would you have the courage to go encourage a young married couple who needed your encouragement, who needed your help, who needed to be encouraged on their journey? How about young parents? How about a new Christian? How about somebody new coming into our building facility? Would you have the courage? And I think Paul mentioned getting out of our comfort zone. That makes one a hero, to go meet that person, to go bring them in. Now, what keeps us from doing what we know to do right? And Paul already mentioned that today. Probably number one thing is fear. either fear of rejection or fear that we don't want to get out of our comfort zones or fear that something bad's going to happen. So what would help us to be less fearful? Well, David faced a bear, faced a lion, faced a Goliath. And how did he have the abilities and lack of fear to do that? Trust in God. And God had provided winds for him. If God is with us, who can be against us? How simple is that? If fear is the issue, there could be some other reasons. There could be, you know, we're having health problems. We're not doing well along those lines. It might keep us from doing those things. Insecurity might fit that category. Not feeling very good about ourselves might fit that category, but all those things can be worked through with God's help. A lack of self-confidence, that we're going to be turned down, or I'm just not good enough, or I don't know enough, those kind of statements. God is with us. He's going to help us overcome whatever it is that we face. God is with us. Who can be against us? Now, I'm going to add one more to this list. We need some courageous leaders. Let's start with our country, and this is not a political advertisement one way or the other. I'm just saying, if we did not have leaders that were courageous and made decisions not based on some poll or based on whether people are going to like me or not, things of that nature, what would happen to our country? If we bring that even closer to our own homes, what if we had no leadership in our homes? Anarchy, somebody said. Yes. What? Mark did? Okay. All right. This is a personal issue. I received a letter in the mail here a week or so ago from somebody I didn't know, and I opened the envelope. And it had a check in there for $323 or something. Well, okay. Wasn't addressed to me, though. But it was addressed to my Mid-Ohio Valley Veterans Group. And the lady explained that she was from a ladies' auxiliary of a VFW in this area. And that the reason she was sending this money, it was totally unsolicited. But the reason she was sending the money, because the VFW organization had to fold because there weren't enough men to take care of their leadership, if you will, officers. The place had to fold. Kind of a sad state of affairs, is it not? Could that happen within a congregation? I know of congregations that have had to close the doors. Perhaps leadership, perhaps it's because people chose not to stand up when they needed to. Perhaps they were just disinterested. Perhaps they forgot that with God's help, they can overcome whatever the issue is. So lack of leadership within our country can result in chaos. Lack of leadership within our homes, did you say anarchy? Okay. Exactly. How about lack of leadership within a congregation? What has God established in regard to leadership? Obviously, there's a pattern. God has set up that pattern that our elders are to be our leaders. I make no reflection on our present elders. That's not what this is about. I'm just saying that's just another example of that. If we had elders that did not stand up for the Lord and chose to sit on the sidelines as the army of Israel had done on this occasion, what's going to happen? Anything goes. Exactly right. We have examples in Old Testament times of that happening, not in a church setting, but everybody did what was right in their own eyes. There's no leadership. That is anarchy. So we don't want our elders to sit on the sidelines. We need leadership. We want them to stand up and make those decisions, to have the courageous heart that we're talking about, to face whatever those Goliaths might be. And along that line, I've not been asked to do this. I'm just put a plug in for our leadership here. We need to pray for our elders. We need to support them and their families. We need to pray for the fact that they are courageous individuals and they still stand for right. Without that leadership, where is this congregation going to? We need leadership. Mark, I'm not going to leave you out. Elders is one of the, how about preachers? I make no reflection on Mark here, or Doug is not my point. What if we had preachers that weren't courageous enough to stand up and fight Goliath? What if they didn't deliver the message that we get here of how to protect ourselves, how to fight against Goliath, how to do those kind of things? We need preachers that preach the word. We need preachers that tell us what God's word is about. We need preachers that tell us what sin is about and the consequences to that. We as a congregation need to stand up and deal with Goliath in whatever fashion we can. Vacation Bible School is an example of that. We need to provide the word and let the word help in our community. We need to minister to those individuals that are in need, whether it be a physical need, whether it be a spiritual need. We need to stand up to that part and that Goliath. There are individuals that are physically hurting. There are individuals that are physically in need. We as a congregation need to take care of that. We have individuals that are spiritually in need, and we need to stand up and minister to those particular individuals. We don't want individuals to be passive or complacent and to sit on the sidelines over here as the children, the army of Israel had done. We need our morale up. We need people like David that say, I'm standing for the Lord, and I'm standing for the Lord because it's the right thing to do. And with God's help, I can overcome a Goliath. I can overcome a lion. I can overcome a bear because God's with me, and I have the confidence to be able to do that. So I challenge you tonight with our class. Our class has been about a simple story. In this corner, we had a 9-foot gentleman armed with armor, with spears, with all the battlement that was needed to fight. Over here, we had a young shepherd boy in this corner who relied upon his God and a simple sling and a rock to be able to fight Goliath. We had this gentleman over here who taunted and cursed the God that David worshiped. We had a guy over here who worshiped the gods of fish and of the dung heap beetles versus the God Jehovah. Which is your choice? Pretty simple one for us, I think. And we know who won this battle. It wasn't Goliath. With God's help, David prevailed. With God's help, David won this particular battle. And because he won this battle and because he trusted in his God enough to stand up to Goliath, he increased the morale of his fellow soldiers over here. And they were so enthused about it that they chased the Philistines clear out of the area. God's a winner. We can be a winner for him. Are we done at any particular time, Mark? Now? Okay. Thank you all for being here. Thank you for your attention. And I ask you to go back and read 1 Samuel 17. And there are many other things that David obviously did. But go back and read 1 Samuel 17, the story of David and Goliath. There's a lot of things to be learned out of that story. And I just encourage you and challenge you, stand up for those things that are right.